Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
Sure is.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to another Black History Month episode.
Week three.
And, you know, Madigan pointed out when we were looking through all of our, like, things to do for Black History Month, while very important topics, they are mostly pretty heavy topics.
Very heavy, very depressing, not celebratory, and
celebratory in the way that they're like, they speak to like the human spirit of perseverance.
Right.
But usually you have to wade through a lot of sad
really
shit.
Horrible stuff, you know? Yeah. And unfortunately, that's the existence of Black history, and that's so important, but I also...
We need some Black joy. Some Black joy.
We need Black joy. Yeah. I mean, I think that there is, I mean, I'm not a part of the Black community, but I think that like one of the reasons why I did one of the Black Excellence shirts is I really like that phrase. I really like those. I think that those are very like positive, wonderful things that you should hold on to, and you shouldn't just be proud of where you come from and struggled through, but right. Like celebrate who the fuck you are and like be excited about history rather than, because I was just looking through them and I'm like, I want to talk about happier things, please.
I feel similarly, because for the month of February I'm like, I'm gonna read Black female authors, like that's right. What I'm gonna do for the month of February, and it's been great. Oh, found some incredible, like 2 5-star books this month.
Love it.
So found some incredible books. However, even the ones that aren't like overtly traumatic, like deal with traumatic themes, because unfortunately that's such a part of our history.
Yeah.
And because of that, actually, like after reading Beloved, I got a nonfiction book, and this would be great to do an entire episode on, but it's called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And
yes, basically, you posted about that.
Yeah, breaking down why Black Americans are the way that they are because of like generational trauma.
It's PTSD, 100%. Right. And I think that while...
But even I had to take I got halfway through Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome and was like, you know what? I'm going to take just a little bit of a break.
That's fucking heavy. And you need to. I think with that kind of book, it's like, let me pick it up and read this for a bit and then put it down. Then pick it back up and read this for a bit and put it down. Because
wash my brain out with a little bit of like young adult fantasy.
Right. Or like, you know, some Bob's Burgers or something. I don't know. But yeah, I just think that while we have discussed even this month and probably will discuss next week, something that is going to be more about the, you know,
struggle.
The struggle and the strength of the human spirit and all of those things. I really wanted to discuss something that I've always heard about when Black History Month comes up, but I wanted to know more and I wanted to go deeper, because one thing that comes up every year on Black History Month, inventions you didn't know were made by Black people and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, okay, awesome. Who are these people?
Yeah, let's spotlight them just a little bit.
And I thought that instead of, like, we already did a feminist fave, I didn't want one of us to just talk about one person. I thought it would be kind of cool for us to teach each other and you about the different inventions and inventors that we learned about this week, and kind of have it be like about a bunch of different people and different inventions.
Yeah. Do you want to go back and forth and kind of I'm sure we didn't compare notes before starting this, so I'm sure we have the same people.
We'll share notes and things like that, and we'll both talk and things like that. But yeah, let's go back and forth with who we want to.
And I know you definitely have a couple I don't have, so I'm very eager to hear about that.
Definitely
as well.
One, and it's one that I think was one of my favorites that I learned about, so I'm very excited to talk about them.
All right. Well, I'll kick us off.
Yeah.
With the traffic signal.
Great one. I do have some notes on that one.
Awesome.
Let me find a traffic signal.
Okay, so the traffic signal was invented by a man named Garrett Morgan. He had only an elementary school education. So Garrett Morgan began his career as a sewing machine mechanic, again, only with an elementary school education.
And that's going to be a very common thread through a lot of these, especially
on your own.
And a lot of these inventions were made in like the 1800s or early 1900s.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people came from enslaved parents.
Yes. or slavery themselves.
Or slavery themselves and things like that, where education was not offered to them, yet they were wicked smart and business savvy and holy and shit.
Innovative. Like, I really do feel like, I feel like necessity is the mother of invention, right? Like, that's of what course. They always say. And it's just like, it makes sense. A lot of these inventions, you know, make sense.
Right.
Because of that. But he began his career as a sewing machine mechanic. He then went on to patent several inventions, including an improved sewing machine, a hair straightening product, and a respiratory device that would later provide the blueprint for World War I gas masks.
Yeah, he called it the smoke hood, and it was made for firefighters to be able to like see through smoke and go into fires without breathing in all of the toxic chemicals and things like that, which is crazy.
Inventors' minds is so so interesting to
me. Fire, traffic.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an engineer's mind, I guess. Because like for me, I can look at something and be like, there's got to be an easier way to do that. And
but I don't know what that is.
I can even maybe think of an easier way to do it, but I'm like, there's no way I could create a product. You know?
I have to interject right now because this just popped into my head. Did you ever have one of those in your head when you were a kid where you were like, if this existed, it would make my life so much easier?
All the time. I feel like all the time.
Okay, because my big one, and I still think about it every time I'm in a long car ride because my bladder is the size of a pea.
Uh-huh.
I always wish that I could invent a toilet in the car where like the seat would like flip or like move aside.
It would smell so bad.
But no, you would have like a separate like tank below your car that would hold it, and then you would just like you had an RV, you'd like go to a reservoir and you would just like let it out when you were done.
Okay, but I have questions.
Okay,
so are you just peeing in front of whoever else is in the car?
I figured that like if you wanted some privacy, like maybe cars could have like a curtain thing or something. I was a child. I didn't think it through. But I've also never been one to close a door when I'm peeing anyways, so maybe that just didn't really like,
I need my privacy.
I, you know, this again, sorry, I'm sidetracking us, but when I was...
No, it's very entertaining. It is.
When I was maybe like 11, I moved to the upstairs like loft part of our house that had a bathroom. And it was so small, right? And my house was a pop-up house because every time my grandma had a kid, they added on to the house. They added a garage. They added a back part of the house. They added an attic, loft area, the whatever. Dream.
That's what I would love to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, 1950s living right there. And so I had this tiny bathroom and the door opened like inward. So I had no room in this bathroom. So we just took the door down and I had streamers. So like anytime my friends came over, my boyfriend in high school, like I would just pee in the lot. Like you could hear, I could see, like there was no, I've just never had a weird thing about peeing in front of people.
You know, I don't
Unless
know.
Unless I'm worried that a fart's going to slip out, then the pee is not coming.
Yeah. The thing is, I would do it, but I don't. Like with my mom, like that's something that was not like an issue in my house.
Do you
like,
close the door to pee here?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, yes. Yeah.
Oh my God. I even forget when I'm going number two sometimes and Max gets really upset with me. Max, like you can't even say poop around him. When I was with there was nary ever a bathroom door closed.
We've discussed this. OG listeners will know because we have had this conversation before. And it is a hard pass from me. My friend, who I love very much, I won't out her on this podcast, but the first time, she's now the wife of one of my best friends. And she sat at your table at the wedding, at my wedding.
Oh, I love her. She's cute.
Yes. So the first time I met her, the very first time I met her, we were having a conversation. She was like, walk with me or whatever. And we were both drunk. And she was like, okay, walk with me so that we could keep talking. And she went into the bathroom, shut the door and just like pulled down her pants and started peeing and just kept talking to me like nothing was going on. And I'm like, I met you an hour ago.
Oh no, that would be me 100%. We got to get back to the episode.
We really do.
But I was at work last week or the week before and I had to pee so bad, but my friend Bree was getting the trash out of the bathroom and I was like, I'm not holding it. I closed the door behind me and locked it. I was like, don't call HR, like as I'm pulling my pants. So like luckily, like we're friends. Like I knew it wouldn't be like a problem and she would be fine with me peeing in front of her. Like I wasn't crossing any sort of like weird lines or anything. But I was like, I'm peeing right now and you're going to have to be a part of this because I can't hold it anymore.
Interesting. Well, anyway, none of
no shame. Okay, sorry.
Anything to do with Garrett Morgan, literally at
Garrett all. Garrett Morgan, he is rolling in his grave like, right now. Like,
why? For once I'm being honored and this is the conversation you're having. So to get back to it, he, like I said, patented several inventions, an improved sewing machine, a hair straightening product, and the respiratory device that would later provide the blueprint for WW1 gas masks. But perhaps his most influential invention was the improved traffic light. So yes. In 1923, he created a new kind of traffic signal, one with a warning light, aka the yellow, to alert drivers. Well, it's the yellow now. I don't know if it was then. To alert drivers that they would need to stop.
But it wasn't even drivers, because at this time, it was carriages, yeah. Drivers, walkers, bikers. Mm. Everybody was sharing the same road and there was no order. But there was a stop and go light because there was a Detroit police officer named William Potts who created the first modern day traffic light in 1920. But it only had a stop and go system on it. And so Morgan was like,
People push it even with the yellow, you know, yeah. So like
you really can't in LA. You got to be careful. I always wait an extra second at the green before I go, and it probably annoys people, but I'm too scared of getting smashed. I've seen it. It's horrible. But yeah, this guy is like, clearly this is not working. A horse in a car is not going to stop on a dime when you tell it right. to. And all he witnessed one particularly horrible accident and was like, I got to put a stop to this.
Yeah. He's like, I have the ability.
I got smart the brains enough. For yeah. this bitch. Mm-hmm.
So he quickly acquired patents for his traffic signal. And it's really a rudimentary version of the modern three-way traffic light.
It's like, and it exactly what it looks like. Mm-hmm. When you Google him and look at his Wikipedia photos with all of his like drawings and things like that, a lot of these inventions look similar. You can see the inspiration for maybe what we're using now, but this pretty much just looks like a traffic light.
Right. I mean, and it was used in the United States, Britain, and Canada, and eventually he sold it to General Electric for $40,000, which at the time was a good chunk of money.
A great chunk of money. He played that one really, really right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I am going to talk about the invention of the dough kneader and roller, Judy Reed.
Okay, I don't have this one on my list.
So there's very, very little known about Judy Woodford Reed, and that is why a lot of people don't know about her. She first appears on U.S. Census records as a 44-year-old seamstress from a town near Charlottesville, Virginia. Sometime between 1880 and 1885, her husband died and Judy moved to Washington, D.C. with her children. Essentially, all that is known about Judy is from her patent for a, quote, dough kneader and roller, which was granted to her in September of 1884. The new design of the roller would make dough mix more evenly while being kept covered and protected. So it's kind of like a stand mixer, essentially, an early stand mixer.
Like I have a dough hook on my KitchenAid.
Exactly. And there's a cover on it, so the dough's not going to get everywhere. It's going to go evenly, things like that.
Let me tell you, man, I love to bake bread. We were having this conversation earlier.
Like literally an hour ago.
Yeah. And there is something about like kneading it yourself, but it takes forever.
Well, and if you want the even consistency mm-hmm. and all the same, and also if that's how you're feeding your family all the time, this yes. isn't just like a fun thing for you to do.
Right. Exactly.
Efficiency is key here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that was her invention. It's unlikely that she was able to read or write, as she and her husband are listed as illiterate on their census records, and on the patent, she only signed X.
Yeah.
She didn't sign her name. So mm-hmm. this was very common at the time for female inventors because they wanted their product to be taken seriously. So either they would use a male name or they would just sign it X.
Yes.
Or if they co-invented it with their husband, the husband's name would go first and so on and so forth. So this woman, it seems, really didn't have much of an education. I can assume from the years that it's very possible that she could have been from an enslaved family as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably why we don't have a lot of information. But there are four women that I'm going to be mentioning that are, it's kind of undetermined who was the first Black woman to get a patent. Mm. But they say that Judy was the first.
Yeah.
But then there are also these three others that are kind of, it's disputed as to who was the first exactly.
Right. And as I'll kind of go into a little bit on this next person.
Yeah.
Patents aren't free. To this day, they aren't free. So like you had to save your money and really believe in your product.
And you had to would you have to like create a prototype and things like that? Like, I feel like that would be expensive too.
I imagine probably so. Yeah.
And like hiring people to help you make it or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Distribution and all of that stuff. So the next person that I want to talk about, and this is, I feel like very relevant to our podcast, is the inventor of the sanitary belt. And that is Mary Beatrice Davidson Kenner. Many names.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary Beatrice Elizabeth Mary David Ann Kenner.
Ann Kenner. So before the advent of disposable pads, women still used cloth pads and rags during their period. Inventor Mary Beatrice Davidson Kenner hoped to change all of that. Now, I remember being a young woman and watching like historical fiction, like it wasn't Game of Thrones, but something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
I think I was reading a book actually, like a Philippa Gregory novel.
Okay.
And they were talking about, because it was like Elizabethan times or something. Yeah. And they were talking about like sticking just like wads of cloth up there.
Can
to
I
like
tell
stop.
You something horrible that I've said on this podcast before that you've forgotten? That my mom used to do that.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If she didn't have a tampon or something, she would stick stuff up her, which I'm like, are you nuts?
I've blocked that out.
But I also learned about sanitary belts from my mom because she got her period in 1960.
Right, when they were still using them.
They were still using them. And so when
my grandma used them too.
Yeah. So like that was something that like when I got my period, my mom was like, oh my God, you're so lucky you didn't have to deal. Like you've got tampons and pads. Like
I think I have one of my grandma's or my mom.
That's weird.
Right. Okay. Yes. My mom like cleaned
I mean, it's
out.
A cool artifact, but like
I
gross.
Don't want it. I don't think I kept it. My mom like got a bunch of stuff from my grandparents' house and like gave me one of her purses that had stuff in it.
And it
I
had
think
a sanitary belt in it?
A belt. Yeah. The belt portion. And I was just like.
It's no. like suspenders for your period.
Yes. So in 1957, she had saved enough money to afford a patent on her invention. So she had been accepted into Howard University. She was very smart. She'd been inventing things basically her whole life. Since she was a little kid, she would mm-hmm. imagine like inventions that would make their lives easier. And she got accepted into Howard University, but she could not afford to pay the tuition. So she had to drop out after a year and a half. Mm. But she worked jobs and she was able to save enough money to pay for her patent for the sanitary belt with disposable like moisture-proof napkins. There was like a pocket for disposable yeah. moisture-proof napkins.
Which had to have been a very shocking thing at the time, particularly for a black woman to be talking about periods and right. menstruation mm-hmm. and sanitary products and things like that. Like I feel like even now we just like we still see the blue liquid. We're just seeing some commercials with right. red liquid now. Like, you know, there's yes. so much stigma surrounding that that like that's a pretty ballsy thing to do.
Right.
I feel like.
But at the same time, this was less likely to get menstrual blood on clothing, like to leak through and stain right. clothing. And I think, you know, with this being a kind of male dominated field, the people who are making the decisions of like what goes through or buying patents or whatever, they probably don't like seeing menstrual blood leaking through. So they're like, whatever we can do to
blue
alleviate
liquid.
That from happening. But she said, one day I was contacted by a company that expressed an interest in marketing my idea. I was so jubilant. I saw houses and cars and everything about to come my way. A company rep drove to Kenner's house in Washington to meet with her, and she said that when they found out she was black, they dropped their interest and told them that they were no longer interested in her product. So she definitely faced a lot of discrimination, but she is still considered the first woman to invent, or the first person to invent, the what has now become this massive industry yeah. of menstrual care products that
wow
honestly thank God.
Thank God.
Thank God. If I'm without a tampon or a pad or like anything, and you have to like roll up a bunch of toilet paper and yeah. put it in your underwear, it is so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable.
And she eventually filed 5 patents in total, which was more than any other African-American woman in history. So amazing.
Absolutely amazing. This is another one that showed up on a lot of different lists. And it's one that I really... It tickles me. This story just tickles me. I'm going to talk about the inventor of the first home security system.
I have the most notes about this person.
Because it's hilarious and wonderful. So Mary Van Britten Brown. Amazing. So Mary was a nurse who invented an early security unit for her home in Queens, New York. She lived in an area of Queens called Jamaica that was kind of like a high crime rate at the time. Her husband worked long hours. She was home alone a lot and felt really unsafe. And she was also very sick of the prolonged length of time it took for the police to arrive in her neighborhood. So she wanted to do something that would keep her and her family safe. She was also 40 years old, I want to say, at this time when she first started this whole endeavor. She began by creating three peepholes in the door to provide access for tall and average height people along with children.
I love that it was, she was so considerate. She's like, we'll have one up here.
Yeah.
One in the middle, one down here.
It's like Goldilocks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make sure everybody can see.
Exactly. But also I can see like, this was also a time where I feel like childcare wasn't as frequent and like kids would be at home
or
like left home alone. And yeah. It's like, if your husband is working and you're a stay at home mom, but you have to go do something and your kid has to stay home, it's like, you better give him a fucking peephole at least, you know?
Yeah, I got the safest house on the block.
Exactly. She then set up a camera that adjusted from peephole to peephole to allow people inside the house to look outside to see who it was. She wanted this to be visible from any room in the house as well, so she set up a wireless television system where she used a radio-controlled wireless system to stream the video to any TV in the house.
Right. She's also credited with the invention of the first closed-circuit television.
Yeah.
So,
like, accidentally, brilliant. Accidentally invented, like, two things. So it was she and her husband who invented this. Oh, and they also created a two-way microphone that allowed people inside to communicate out and outside in. So her husband and...
And she also had an alarm button that could be pressed to contact police.
Like a panic button. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
How
did she do all this? I don't know. And I mean, like, she and her husband just kind of like somehow put all this together.
And the sketches?
Amazing. Out of this world.
Yeah.
So detailed. They were granted the patent in 1966. And her husband's name was listed below hers, which mm-hmm. I love.
You know, she insisted on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems like it was her freaking deal. She also later added more to her invention after receiving the patent, like creating a system to lock and unlock the door remotely. And like Keegan said, a button that would contact the police and emergency responders with a tap of a button. Her inventions would be the predecessor to video monitoring, remote controlled door locks, push button alarm triggers, instant messaging to security providers and police, as well as two-way voice communication. It also led to CCTV surveillance in public areas.
Yeah.
Holy shite.
She had a massive impact. And this is someone who I think maybe I learned about this person like last year. Like, it's not someone who comes up regularly as an inventor, you know, during Black History Month or whatever. I had no idea that the first person to create a home security system was a Black woman. I had no idea.
Who was like a nurse and a housewife and a mom and was like, let me just finagle this shit.
Yeah, I'll just put some wires together.
Like,
that'll do the trick.
How?
Yeah. She also gained recognition by getting an award from the National Science Committee, and she had an interview with the New York Times in 1969, which I think is kind of a big deal. Like, it's still the 60s. It's a Black woman who's invented, you know, this home security system.
Of course.
And you're getting recognition in the New York Times for your achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
Let's talk about the inventor of automatic elevator doors.
Which another great one.
Again, nothing that I'd... You know, my first apartment in LA didn't have automatic elevator doors. Like,
really?
It was an old apartment. You had to shut the elevator.
I didn't go to that one, did
no,
I? I was going to say, I remember a real elevator at that place.
Yeah, no, it had... You had... And it was terrifying.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, it felt very unsafe.
I mean, that's like how they are at like my storage unit.
Yes. So let's talk about Alexander Miles. Before automatic doors, people had to manually shut both the shaft and elevator doors before riding. So if you forgot to do this, it could lead to some really gruesome and horrific accidents.
Can I really quick say that he was born on my mom's birthday?
Oh, sure. What day is that?
May 18th.
May 18th,
but Taurus? He was born in 1838. Oh, my mom is Taurus through and through.
Yeah,
stubborn as a goddamn bull.
I'm a Taurus rising, so I understand. So the story goes that his daughter fell one time and got very injured.
I didn't see that. Mm-hmm. I just thought that he was like seeing all these other people. Like, if the doors weren't closed, you would just like, you could fall down the shaft and die.
No, his daughter fell, or that's at least that's the
story.
Lore,
that's the
right?
lore. Yeah.
Yes. That his daughter fell one time and was injured, but, you know, thankfully not killed by this. And so he was like, you know what? And this man was a barber. Like,
yeah.
He was a barber, but he was like, you know what? We're going to do something about this. So he developed a solution. He designed a flexible belt attachment to the elevator cage and drums positioned to indicate if the elevator had reached a floor. Mm-hmm. The belt allowed for automatic opening and closing when the elevator reached the drums on the respective floors. In 1887, he took out a patent for the mechanism that automatically opens and closes elevator shaft doors, and his designs are largely still in use today. It's basically the exact same design that we see every time you get on and off an elevator.
Wild.
Created by a black man and barber in 1887.
So freaking cool. So cool. Alrighty. I'm going to talk about another one of the disputed first or second patents from a black woman, Miriam Elizabeth Benjamin. Now, the name didn't ring a bell, but as soon as I saw her picture, it's come up a million times as a suggestion for feminist faves. For
different,
like when I Google like forgotten feminists in history and things like that. She received the patent for the gong and signal chair for hotels on July 17, 1888. Let's talk about it a little bit. So she was born in Charleston, South Carolina in, I'm assuming 1886, but I wrote 186. yes, because then her family moved to Boston in 1873, where Miriam attended segregated high school. She went on to Howard University's medical school, but while working as a government clerk in a number of federal departments, she obtained legal training, attended law school, and became a lawyer. Then she was a teacher in D.C. from 1888 to 1889. So more about this gong chair for hotels. So the chair had both a gong and a signal connected to it. So when you pushed a button, it would alert someone that a guest wanted assistance. It was designed to cut down expenses on wait staff because at the time it was like too expensive to have waiters constantly coming to like people in like hotels and things like that. I don't really know the whole hotel deal with it and things like that.
Was it at the front desk?
It just says that it was like a gong chair for hotels, but it's more so kind of like what was spawned from it more so than like what it actually was used for.
I feel like I've seen that kind of similar thing. Like when you watch like Downton Abbey and you'll see that kind of like bell system, right?
Yeah.
Where like you can kind of like ring people. I don't know if that's the same thing.
Well, on this was kind of the precursor to the alert system on airplane chairs.
Oh.
So it's kind of that same sort of system. In the patent, she also wrote that the chair was designed with legislators in mind, including the House of Representatives, and lobbied for it to be adopted there. And it was, because it was a way so that legislators didn't have to like stop what they were doing or anything like that. They could just like,
oh, I need assistance.
They could just summon help and things like that. So after she makes this amazing invention, she goes on to continue inventing, practicing law, and making music. Like there's articles about her like compositions and things like that in the music world. And like this woman is like so unbelievably accomplished.
God, where was I when you were handing out gifts? Because like these people,
he took a nap that day.
Legitimately. He was like, you're fine. You're going to be fine.
Her whole family was pretty amazing. Her younger brother, Edgar Pinkerton Benjamin, established the trousers shield or bicycle clip on May 31st, 1892.
Wow.
So two inventors in the family.
Wow.
Wow.
That's very cool. Okay, let's talk about the inventor of refrigerated trucks.
Ooh.
Frederick McKinley Jones. Now, this guy, Frederick Jones, had a bummer childhood.
Like, very bummer.
I was like, that sucks.
Yeah. I think this was the one that I have the second amount of notes on because of the childhood.
Yes. I didn't even go into detail about his childhood. So feel free to jump in. All I know is that his parents were biracial, or interracial. His mother was black and his father was white. His mother left the family.
Yeah.
And then his white father was like, I don't know what to do with this baby. So gave him to relatives and then he died.
It wasn't even a relative. Died. So what happened was the mother left when he was really young. The father raised him till he was seven. Like you said, was like, I can't raise this child anymore, and left him to a priest at a Catholic rectory.
It was a priest. That's right.
Yeah. And then he eventually left the school and rectory by the age of 11 and got a job as a cleaning boy. By the age of 14, he was working as an auto mechanic and he was largely self-taught. He's actually a Minnesota man, which is pretty cool. He moved to a place called Halleck, Minnesota in 1912, where he worked as a mechanic on a very large farm. And he said that about the town of Halleck, that was kind of funny. He describes in a newspaper that the place was where a man was judged more on his character and ability than on the color of his skin. I wrote, thanks for not being racist for a sec, Minnesota.
For like a second. I'm glad this little town did right for a minute. You know?
Yeah, right. He also fought in World War I in the first all-black unit. It was eventually promoted to sergeant. He went back to Holick after the war, where he began creating inventions for radio and motion pictures. He worked for this cinema supply company in Minneapolis for a while.
And we should say that he, again, it's not like he had this incredible education. He's self-taught in mechanical and electrical engineering. And that's what he used. Like, he taught himself mechanical and electrical engineering and invented a range of devices specifically relating to refrigeration, sound, and automobiles.
Yeah. At first, he was working with this guy in Minneapolis that was like working for a cinema supply company. So it was a lot of like sound and visuals and things like that. But once he got this idea for this refrigeration stuff, they were like, that's where the money is going to be. We're going to lock into that.
Right. And he was so prolific as an inventor that he actually ended up taking out more than 60 patents throughout his life, including a patent for the roof-mounted cooling system that is used to refrigerate goods on trucks. That was the first thing that we used, which was massively helpful during World War II.
I was going to say, it was kind of like, cool, we can keep food cool, you know, things like that. But then when World War II came along, preserving blood and medical supplies and sanitary products and things like that.
Well, I think we really take that for granted. We take refrigeration for granted in the 21st
century. Unless our power goes out.
Right. Like, it changed the game. Like, there are a few things that, like, changed the game in terms of food. And refrigeration is one. Pasteurization is one. And especially during wartime, whenever we had to transport food to troops, both of those things cut down on illness.
Yep.
They allowed for a lot more, like, fresh foods to make it to people who live in rural communities. And also, once again, in World War II, when we were trying to get food, fresh food to the troops.
And it was massively supplies, blood.
Exactly.
All of that.
Without these kind of like refrigeration systems that we have today, we wouldn't even be able to have the kind of vaccine effort that we have right now with COVID and everything. Keeping things at a certain temperature.
Wild.
It's massive.
Wild.
Yeah.
He also developed a portable x-ray machine, a movie ticket dispenser, and a quote snow machine, which attached skis to a propeller powered snowmobile. Which sounds dangerous.
It sounds very dangerous and very Minnesotan, if I might say.
So Minnesota. Yeah. All right. I'm going to talk about the guy that I'm so excited about because I don't know how long this episode has been going and I don't want to miss out on talking about him. I'm going to talk about James Edward Maceo West.
Oh, and you did say that Maceo is my brother's name.
And I love that name.
And it is such a unique name that you don't hear it very often.
No.
It's like when you hear it,
and that's what caught my eye. Yeah. I was like, Maceo, what?
Yeah.
I got to look into this. And I ended up adoring this person. And we have a lot to thank for this person as well in many ways. So, fun fact. James's mom was actually one of the human computer group known as Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. Her name was Matilda West.
Matilda.
I know. Another tie. Along with Gerhard Sessler, James invented the foil electret microphone in 1962.
Yes. Oh, I do have this person.
Yes. While developing instruments for human hearing research, which is a great tie-in for me. That was a big thing that he was interested in. It was like human hearing and ears and things like that. So with this microphone, compared to previous condenser microphones, the electret mic had higher charge hold and didn't require DC bias. And I put an asterisk next to that and never looked it up. Don't know what that is, but apparently it was a good thing that it didn't require it. More than 90% of more than 2 billion microphones produced annually to this day are based on the principles that James and Gerhard created. They're also used in phones, camcorders, hearing aids, and baby monitors.
And probably, your iPhone, like... anything that's a relatively cheap microphone. So for anyone
that needs to hold charge for like a long period of time, essentially.
Yes. Yeah. So for anyone who's like dabbled in podcasting, for instance, like we use condenser microphones. They're typically more expensive. So this kind of microphone would have been a very big deal for things like this. Just like your at home cassette recorder or anything like that.
Yeah. Exactly. He recently, because he's still alive, did a study of the acoustic environment in hospitals and found that they are generally too loud, which would affect staff and patients alike. As of right now, he's 90 years old and he is still an active inventor. He is working on a device to detect pneumonia in infant lungs.
I love it. I love it. You know, there's a common thread with a lot of these people where it's like, this is just who they are. It's how their brain works. They see problems and then they're like, we got to find a solution for that problem.
Yeah. So Dr. West has had over 250 patents to his name during his lifetime so far. In addition to his amazing achievements, he's also made an incredible advocate for greater diversity in the fields of science and technology. He worked at the Bell Laboratories, where he founded the Association of Black Laboratory Employees, or ABLE, which was formed to, quote, address placement and promotional concerns of Black Bell Laboratory employees.
That's awesome. Okay, so I want to talk about George Washington Carver. Listen.
We have to. We got to talk about George Washington Carver because they've been lying to us our whole lives.
Truly. Okay, because here's the thing. George Washington Carver was born in Diamond Grove, Missouri. There's a George Washington Carver National Monument there where like you can visit like his house that he was born at. They've preserved it.
I love that.
It's very, very cool. He is a very, very cool guy. However.
And he also did a lot of really important things.
Very.
However, what did he not do?
Everyone tells us that George Washington Carver invented peanut butter. And listen.
I learned it in school.
We all did. And it still comes up in doing the prep for this episode, it still comes up on
Oprah list that he created peanut butter. When I was taking the notes, I just turned to Max and said, George Washington Carver didn't invent peanut butter. And he was just like, and I didn't invent. He didn't know who George Washington Carver was in the peanut butter. I was like, did you go to elementary school? Like, he's, I remember, like, one eating of the peanut 10, butter.
He's one of the 10 black people we learn about during Black
I
History
know,
Month.
Right? Like, I'm like, you don't know who George Washington Carver is?
And listen, he did invent a type of peanut butter, but he wasn't necessarily the first one to invent a similar product.
Well, like, no, Aztecs have been, like, grinding peanuts and stuff forever, right, and having something similar.
I guess it's kind of like a technicality of, like, what do you consider to be an invention?
Well, and also because he worked in agriculture, so he was all about, like, food science and gardening and things like that. So for him, he would create these like bulletins about different foods, and it would be like 250 things to do with peanuts.
Yes, exactly.
And essentially peanut butter was one of those things, but it wasn't like labeled peanut butter, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and again, like when you're dealing with food, like trying to get down to like who was the first person to do this thing, because also, you know, a black man is credited with the first person to like make a potato chip, right? But it's just kind of like, did someone fry a potato before that? Like, probably, you know? Yeah. So when you get down to like trying to decide who invented what, like who was the first person to create a paste out of peanut butter that you can spread on, or out of peanuts that you can spread on
exactly.
bread?
Exactly. You know, like, yeah. Did you have in your notes by any chance about the middle initial W? Because I didn't know this.
Washington?
It's not his middle name.
Ooh.
The W has nothing to do with his name.
You know what? I probably knew this when I went to the George Washington Carver National Monument, but I don't remember.
I read it in his Wikipedia page that when he went to school in Minneapolis, Kansas, didn't know that was a place.
Me neither.
At the age of 13, there was another classmate named George Carver, so he added the W. And when people asked him what it stood for, he would say, why not? Very Marsha P. Johnson.
Oh, I love it.
It was like, why not? W. So I don't know where Washington came in exactly.
Sassiness. A black trait. Yeah, I love it.
But they say that he never actually himself used Washington as his middle name. So I don't know how that came to be. But he's George Washington Carver to us.
Right. I mean, and that's what he used. He did live in kind of a certain amount of fame towards the end of his life, the last couple of decades of his life. Like, he's not one of those people who kind of like posthumously became famous.
No, he was famous when he was alive.
Famous during his time. And they used George Washington Carver. So
exactly.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's because it gave him an air of importance, maybe. It was a catchy name because of George Washington.
I mean, hey, with the way we've been going, some relative is listening to this right now and they're going to write into us and let us know.
I hope so. Please do.
If you're a relative of George Washington Carver, please feel free to write in.
Right, give me a heart attack, but go ahead and do it. But getting back to peanut butter.
Yes, so, peanut butter.
He did develop more than 300 uses for the peanut, including soap, skin lotion, and paint. So while he was like a food scientist, among other things, an agriculturalist, he liked to invent ways of using different products. So not just peanuts, but also like soybeans.
And he was like the person that put sweet potatoes on the map.
Yes.
He was like, here's a bulletin of like 73 dyes, 17 wood fillers, paste, breakfast foods, starches, flours, molasses, all these things you can do with sweet potato. So where would we be without Mr. W?
And on a larger scale, because, you know, it's kind of sad that he gets chiseled down in school to the person who invented peanut butter.
Right.
When really, like, he was able to revitalize the agriculture, like, industry in the South, because probably in large part, and this is just speculation on my part, I don't have hard facts for this, but probably in large part because of slavery, due to cotton production in the South, the soil was like ripped of nutrients. There was like, there were no nutrients in the soil in the South. And he did end up going to Tuskegee Institute.
Yes, he was one of the like first president's teachers, so on and so forth.
Yes, Booker T. Washington himself asked him to be the head of the agriculture department at Tuskegee Institute. And he taught there for 47 years.
Yeah.
So, but that's in the South, right? Because he's from Missouri, which thinks it's the South, but
it's technically the Midwest. It's not the South.
It's the Southern
Y'all
Midwest.
Y'all sound like you're from the South, but you're from the Midwest.
Yes, it's the Southern Midwest. And that is where he's from. He's from Southern Missouri. But he went into the South to go to the Tuskegee Institute, and the soil there was so stripped because of cotton production that his knowledge of like agriculture and like what to plant, how to plant things,
like revitalized the South,
like his practices really revitalized the soil in that area, and made it more. I don't want to say profitable, but you know what I'm saying. Like it produced a lot more at that time. So his contributions are actually really, really interesting and incredible.
Yeah, but he just didn't invent peanut butter. I did learn, however, that he did design a mobile classroom to take education to farmers called the Jessup Wagon. So he did invent something.
Yeah, I mean,
like, tangible. Not saying that he didn't invent anything. That's not what I meant by that statement, but you know what I mean.
He invented lots of things. Yes. But yes, I mean, and he was a massive advocate for getting other Black people involved in agriculture.
Right.
And having them learn kind of like the natural sciences. And this was a man who was born into slavery.
Right.
And he was able to rise not only to these great heights educationally, but also to fame in his time, which is like a really big deal.
Huge deal. Yeah. Very big deal.
So, I mean, we stan. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Jinx. All right. I'm going to talk about Ellen F. Englund, who invented a clothes wringer. She was born in Maryland in 1836, but her family eventually moved to D.C. at some point, according to an 1880 census. There, she became a housekeeper and a government employee. Ellen designed a special type of clothes wringer where the machine had two rollers in a frame that was connected to a crank. You can picture this. You've seen it in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Clothing would be fed between the rollers and the crank would then wring the water out of the clothes to dry them.
I always thought that those looked so satisfying when I saw them on movies or whatever.
Or the washboard.
But there was something about like watching the clothes go through that like squeegee situation.
Yeah, I
was
wring all the water out.
It's weirdly satisfying.
Well, that is actually the same mechanism that they use for mops now.
Okay.
So that was her invention that they took, you know, from that to create that kind of like squeegee that we do with the mop. That same kind of lever activity does the same kind of thing.
If there was one of those like visual ASMR TikToks that was just watching like clothes go through that, I would watch it.
I bet you can find it.
It'd be relaxing.
There is something for everyone on the internet. Ellen wanted to sell her patent to a, quote, white person interested in manufacturing the product. She sold it for $18, which today would only still be about $401.64. So she didn't sell her patent for that much. She was quoted saying in an April 1890 edition of Woman Inventor, "You know, I am Black, and if it was known that a Negro woman patented this invention, white ladies would not buy the wringer. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to be known because of my color and having it introduced into the market that this is the only reason." She would attempt to patent another invention, this time wanting credit for her creation, but unfortunately, it never came to be. So the one thing that she actually really did contribute and would become a huge part of the house cleaning industry with, you know, mops and everything else, she really didn't reap a lot of the financial benefits from it. And I think she learned that by, you know, she wanted a white manufacturer to produce it so that people would use it. But she didn't get the same satisfaction in return that she should have and wanted to get.
Right. I mean, this really makes me think of when I talked about Madam C.J. Walker and like the benefit of marketing to your own community.
Yep.
Because, and this is something that we see to this day. I mean, I see it all the time on social media, on like TikTok and Instagram, where Black people will be hyping up other Black people, specifically Black women are incredible at this, like,
yeah,
always hyping up each other's brands, buying from each other's brands. And there is something to be said about that. It's like you can value like and lift up the other people in your community,
right?
And if you seek them out, it could be a gold mine.
Yep.
You know, and
but
like,
I also
so
see her thinking on it.
Me
but
too.
It just,
I do. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like why she did what she did makes absolute sense to me, but it also highlights why what Madam C.J. Walker did was so brilliant.
Exactly.
Because
it just didn't work. She had an amazing, amazing invention and she just really didn't get the credit for it.
Oh, that is such a bummer.
I know.
Okay, let's talk about the carbon light bulb filament, which was invented...
Don't have this one.
invented by Lewis Latimer in 1881. So the light bulb itself was perfected by Thomas Edison, but the innovation used to create longer lasting light bulbs, which is what we use today, came from an African-American inventor named Lewis Latimer. So he was the son of formerly enslaved people. He began working in a patent law firm. That's one way to do it. Get,
right?
Get in there at a law firm. After serving in the military for the Union during the Civil War.
Wow.
So he fought in the Union, which also, by the way, means he had to have been old enough to fight in the Union during the Civil War, which means that he was also probably an enslaved person.
Yeah.
He was recognized for his talent drafting patents. They were like, you are really good at this. And so they promoted him. He was the head draftsman at this agency, this law firm where he worked.
Very
again,
cool.
Like right after the Civil War as a Black man.
And was this
man.
Like a primarily like white agency too?
I believe so.
Wow. I mean, I would assume so. Like that's pretty amazing.
Yes. And there he co-invented and improved bathroom for railroad trains.
I love it.
And then he garnered attention from the U.S. Electric Lighting Company whenever he, and this put him in direct competition with Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
Because they were kind of contemporaries. They
yeah.
were at the same time, right?
Mm.
And this was in 1880. So while there, he patented a new filament for a light bulb using carbon instead of more incendiary material. Like bamboo. So like your light could just
like fuck you, Thomas Edison.
Well, also like dangerous.
Very.
You know what I mean? Like at the time, it's like light bulbs were new. Electricity was very, very new.
But also before then you were using open flame. So I guess.
Yeah. I mean, risky either way.
Yeah.
But I think that there is something to be said about like electricity was very new. And if you're using incendiary kind of like things at the center of your light bulb, that shit could go up whenever.
Yeah, that's true.
So the addition of the carbon filament increased the lifespan and practicality of light bulbs. Like I said, like you could leave a light on and leave the house. And one, you knew that that light bulb was going to last you a very long time. It's similar to what we have going on now. You know, you don't have to replace light bulbs every
couple of days yeah.
or whatever. And in 1884, he went on to work with Thomas Edison at the Edison Electric Light Company.
Wow.
So he really rose from being the child of enslaved parents, fighting in the Civil War, to working with Thomas Edison in his
wow.
in his lifetime. And we have him to thank for, you know, all the lights that we have in our house right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, I think this might be my last one. I've kind of jumped around a little bit. I'm going to talk about the woman who improved the ironing board, Miss Sarah Boone.
Awesome.
Sarah was born into slavery in North Carolina in 1832. When she was only 15 years old, she married a freed man named James Boone, freeing her from enslavement. They moved to Connecticut before the start of the Civil War, and Sarah began working as a dressmaker. So the first people that were known to use metal to iron their garments were the Chinese, and the first electric iron, called the electric flat iron, was invented and patented in 1882 by Henry W. Seeley. Sarah invented improvements to Seeley's invention, creating the ironing board that we know today, or something very similar to it. It was designed to improve ironing sleeves and bodices of women's garments. It was narrowed and curved, made of wood. The shape and structure allowed to fit a sleeve, and it was reversible so you could iron both sides. So it's kind of like the inspiration for the shape that we have, mm-hmm. where you kind of slide your shirt or your pant leg or something over it to get a flat surface to be able to iron it on.
Well, I will say this. As an adult, I have never owned an ironing board.
Me neither.
And I have felt that because when you try to iron on like a bed or like any other surface.
Or like me where I literally use my hair straightener and I hang up my shirt and I like try to like clasp it down. Madigan. You've never done that?
No.
Oh my God. I do it all the time. If I've got like a shirt with like one big wrinkle in it, I'll just fire up the hair straightener.
Oh, no, I've never done that.
It works pretty well. It's just it doesn't work. I mean, it's just tedious and time consuming.
I can't judge. I literally just put my clothes on a hanger and like put them in the bathroom when I'm taking a shower. And I'm like, hope there's enough steam.
I do that too. But then they sometimes feel like wet afterwards. Mm-hmm. Like it's a toss up.
Life is so hard. But sometimes I'll try to iron because I do have an iron. And like sometimes I'll try to iron on like other surfaces, like my bed or like a chair or like, and there is something about there's a reason why our grandmothers owned ironing boards. And this is why.
Fun fact, the same ex that I mentioned earlier that was fine with pooping in front of me also ironed his pants always.
Like jeans?
All of his pants were ironed. Like that, I remember like.
That vibes, that tracks.
Right? Yes. Does that not like totally make sense? Like I've ironed his pants so much and I like.
Say what you want about him, but he was pretty well groomed.
He was too well groomed.
Yeah.
He was better groomed than me.
Yeah.
By a long shot. The man would never even go to the grocery store without having a fully color coordinated outfit and whatever. Way too much
I'm
for me.
I'm in these exact same gray sweatpants like pretty much every day. So
yeah, honestly, I pretty much feel the same. And I definitely don't need to feel dressed up to go to the grocery store. I've never felt that.
However, if you ever did, the ironing board.
The ironing board is the one for you. But no, I mean, God bless a good ironing board. Remember back, my mom would tell me that her mom would iron my grandfather's socks and underpants.
For why? I always wondered that.
A nice crease. I don't know.
Who's going to see it?
You're going to know. You're going to feel it. I don't know. Hmm. But imagine like stepping into some like freshly ironed boxers or something like that. Like that.
If they were still warm, yeah.
Yeah, like straight out of the dryer underpants.
Cozy.
We also discussed in the anniversary episode how nice a warm tampon feels. So there's a.
I don't know that we said it was nice.
We did. I was like, have you ever put a tampon in after sitting in the car for a while? It's like, oh yeah. Stop making that face. Don't judge us.
I am judging us. Yeah, I am.
Oh God, so many tangents tonight. I'm sorry. My brain is everywhere.
It's okay. Listen, that's where we're at. Okay, so I have one last person. And I literally have like three sentences on this
Wonderful.
Person. But I had, as children of the 90s, we couldn't not mention Lonnie Johnson, who is the inventor of the Super Soaker.
Yes, the Super Soaker.
Yes, the Super Soaker, a staple of every 90s child.
Yes.
Childhood.
Everywhere in the U.S., everyone had a goddamn Super Soaker.
Do people still have those? Like, do kids still use Super Soakers?
Oh, yeah. When I was still nannying tea, we had a whole bunch of, like, guns by the pool that we would fill up and, like, have, like, water bikes in the pool and
the
stuff.
The Super Soaker was a moment. Yeah. I remember it. And there were, like, different ones. There was, like, the really big one that was, like, a machine gun Super Soaker.
You had to, like, really pump it up.
Yeah. And then there was, like, little ones that were, like, you know.
Little handguns.
Little handguns, right? Which, you know, culturally, I don't know, children with fake guns. But so fun. Like,
so fun.
Just the best time. Like, a hot summer
day. And you could fucking nail someone with one of those, too.
Nothing beat, like, a Super Soaker fight on, like, a hot day. Ugh.
Beautiful. So, running through a sprinkler.
Lonnie Johnson was an engineer. He was working at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Fuck?
Yes, which makes sense. Like, when you think about it, you're like, oh, of course. Like, he understood how, like, physics and shit
But he
worked.
Made a toy.
Yeah. So during his free time while working at NASA.
I like him.
He invented the Super Soaker.
I love
which
him.
I think is incredible.
God bless this man.
Yes. It hit shelves in 1990, the year I was born, and its popularity immediately skyrocketed. In 2017, Forbes reported that it had earned over 1 billion in retail sales.
Easily. So, oh my gosh.
Incredible.
Incredible.
Love it. A black man invented the Super Soaker.
A black man in NASA invented the Super Soaker. That's fucking nuts.
In his free time. Like, I'm like, if I work at NASA, I have no free time.
I have no free time. And my free time is me, like, doing, like, stupid shit.
I'm using the fact that I work at NASA to get out of everything I don't want to do. Like, yeah. I'm like, I have no time. I work at NASA. Sorry, I can't make it.
Sorry.
You know.
Sorry for ya.
Yeah.
I've got to say, one thing that was really interesting in looking at all of these stories were that while there were people like Lonnie who were like NASA employees, mm-hmm. and people that had like great educations and things like that, it was more amazing to me that like people like you and I, where I feel like had an idea and motivation, were able to like create this thing that changed everybody's lives. Like, this wasn't some important person that did this thing. It was just everyone. It was whoever. Right.
I mean, you know? I would say that that's most of the people on this list.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of why I said in the beginning of this episode, it's like necessity is the mother of invention. It's like these people were like, we don't have, like, we can make it easier on ourselves. Like,
exactly.
I have an idea of how I can make this easier on myself. And for some of them, it was that, it was just that, right? Like a sanitary belt or a ironing board. And then for some people, they truly did just have this extraordinary brain where they were able to say, like, I can teach myself mechanical engineering.
To create, you know, refrigerated trucks.
Right.
You know, there's, each one of those people are incredibly intelligent and smart.
Absolutely.
And business savvy and creative.
And innovative. Yeah.
But it's amazing that it goes to show you that no matter what your level of technical education is, you do have the possibility to still achieve things like that. Because for me, I would be like,
doubting myself.
I would doubt it. Yeah. How would I even do that? Why me?
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's a really easy, like, spiral to put yourself in. So the fact that these people were just like we keep saying, purely out of necessity. I'm thinking about Mary in the home mm-hmm. security system.
Yeah. Don't doubt yourself too much. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like the world is constantly telling us, and for myself, I know that I have not done so many things in my life because I thought I wouldn't be good at it or people would laugh at me or whatever. And it's just like, you know what? Just do it. Just, what do you have to lose?
Because what if it works?
Right? If you have an idea, just go for that idea. And not that this is the same, but it's exactly the advice that I give people when they're like, how do I start a podcast? Or how do I start anything? It's like,
you just do it.
You just do it. And maybe you'll fail, but maybe you won't fail. And like, how cool is that? You could change modern history.
Yeah.
Because you had an idea, you know, and that's so cool.
Moving.
Yeah.
Inspirational. And that's exactly what I wanted for this week. So I'm glad that we were able to discuss all of these amazing people. I'm really glad that we got to cover a broad range of inventions as well and not just focus on one or two. So very, very wonderful. This was a really fun one for me. I hope that you all learned something new. How many of you thought that George Washington Carver invented peanut butter? How many of you thought that his real middle name was Washington? This is wild stuff here, everybody.
Groundbreaking journalism.
I need to go to bed. All right. That is all we have for you today, everybody. But I do want to remind you all that we do have new merch. If you would like to check it out, you can go to the link in our show notes.
I did update it.
Keegan did update it. I've checked
it
out.
Now.
It should all work. If you would like to go another route, though, we also have a link in our bio on our Instagram, which is at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. If you would like to suggest any topics for the future, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. And last but certainly not least, as we have so many exciting, wonderful things coming up in the future for all of you wonderful listeners, if you haven't done so already, we would greatly appreciate it now more than ever for you to leave us a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It truly does mean so much to us, and we really appreciate it. All right, that's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye.